What the EFL is the Football League podcast that for 1 week only is all about the managers. Coming up, we speak to one from each league as we hear from Marty Cifuentes, Johnny Jackson and Dean Brennan. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And this is a very special show for us. A couple of reasons behind it. One, we're recording on Tuesday and there's loads of games going on midweek, so we didn't want this to age too quickly, talking about the weekend too much. Also, Adrian Clarke is sunning himself in Dubai. So it's me and Sam Parkin and friends. Sam, this should be fun.
Should be really fun. And I'm glad we've got someone from all the leagues, because I was doing Final Score at the weekend and League Two was just tremendous. There was just like so much going on. First half hat tricks, top of the table teams getting beaten by lesser lights. It was just all going off. And I was like a bit of a broken record, praying really somewhere inside that the Championship would pull it round. And it did. I think there was great stories everywhere. And just on Clarkey, we know he's been away on a family holiday, is currently away on a family holiday, but he did send us some video footage of him enjoying himself with a couple of friends out there as well. And I would suggest he probably sent the predictions for later in the show on that evening, because he has gone for some weird outcomes.
Well, he did a lot better than I did last week, as did you, which is nothing new, I suppose. We'll get to that later. Before we really get rolling though, let me remind you of the offer from our partners Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, let's check in the Championship. Where I was at King Power Stadium on Saturday night to see Portsmouth fight back to take a point off Leicester. We're drawing too many games if they want to contend for automatic promotion. Afterwards, I spoke to Fox's boss, Marty Cifuentes, about the game and was thrilled to hear him use one of our finest football cliches in his very first sentence.
Well, definitely a game of two halves. I think the first one was very good, with a lot of good moments, good combinations, a lot of chances. And we spoke in the halftime about the need to score a second or third goal, because we know that in Championship, the game is never controlled enough, even though you are being superior. The second half was poor. We didn't understand that the space was in behind, that the space was very clearly deep in the pitch. And unfortunately, we tried to do things that were not fit for this second half, and then we lost momentum slowly. I think that we conceded some counters that at the end cost us this goal, and then at the end it was just 15 minutes just rush. I like the attitude to try to chase until the last second of the game the win. We chase a lot about the personality of the group, but I think that we need to be self-critical about why the second half was not as good as we should.
And you can see that interview in full on the Leicester City website now, as well as a post-match chat I had with Aaron Ramsey, brackets, not that one, close brackets. I found him to be well attired, smelt tremendous, Sam, and pretty measured in what he said. But I mean, all these draws are going to be a concern for Leicester, aren't they? And Cifuentes in particular. Also, the fact that they seem to be coming at King Power Stadium. What's that? Three on the spin now. Coventry, fine. But Wrexham and Portsmouth taking the lead against teams they'd expect to beat and not done it. It's not the way you want to endear yourself to new supporters.
No, it's not. But I think the reality is that the starts to the season from Southampton and Ipswich are probably doing them a little bit of a favour right now, and just a quick glance at the league table from maybe the most not ardent Leicester City fan who's there every week would say, well, do you know what? It's not the end of the world. It's been a steady start with a squad that is inherited that have probably still got a lot of wounds that they're suffering from last season. And again, I think it's that motivation. Can you switch on to become a Championship player, a top Championship player, after being so off the pace previously in the Premier League? And I think there's maybe an argument, you were there, Matt, at the weekend, that he's possibly been a little bit too loyal to some of the established players, and maybe he may have to rotate a little bit or introduce a little bit more young blood, where that hunger is will be prevalent with them. But you look at the squad again, so I'm contradicting myself probably as I speak, and it's such a strong squad, but only really Fatawu maybe is on it at the required level consistently. So Mavididi, Ayew, Decordova, Reed, these names that have perennially been, you know, Premier League players or top Championship players, have to find that spark to start producing what Leicester should be capable of. So, you know, I think it's a big few weeks for them, starting tonight at Hull. But I think the reality is, because of the struggles of the other relegated sides, I think the faith is just about still with him. Although, because those home performances are a little bit limp, that's where they need to see improvement and pretty quickly. Otherwise, there will be inevitable pressure.
Yeah, he did mix the lineup a little bit, but I think that was largely down to players having been away on international duty, because Decordova, Reed, Ayew, Dakar and Chowdhury all came off the bench and they'd all been away with their countries. Absolutely dominated the first half. They ended up having 14 corners. I think 12 of them were in the first half. Outshot Portsmouth as well. But we've had John Massino on the pod before. You know his assistant John Harley very well. I was so impressed with how he changed things for them at half time. I was with Matt Elliott on co-commentary, and he'd gone down pitch side at the break to have a chat with the stadium announcer, and he said that he saw Massino, Harley and all the staff in deep conversation in the tunnel before they went into the dressing room to try and get their ideas together that they were then going to go and give to the players. But it's always a sign of a good coach, I think, if you're under the cosh and then you manage to get that turned around. And from the first whistle, when they came out, they were the better team by far. That Yang, the South Korean, he looks absolutely unbelievable. Dazel controlled the midfield. John Swift as well, as you and I know, both technically brilliant. But you've got to have something about you, haven't you? If you can get a message across in a half-time team talk that your players can then implement that effectively.
Yeah, and I think it's probably the reality of their situation that, you know, there are going to be games, there's going to be halves where they're going to be second best. That's the reality of probably the budget they're playing with against some of the powerhouses in the Championship. But what he is incredibly measured, I think incredibly intelligent, diligent. You know, there's no doubt that when attractive jobs in the higher echelons of the championship table become available later in the season, he will be in the top two or three for those roles, because it's astonishing that it looks like it's not going to be a relegation battle this season when you factor in kind of the financial constraints that are probably on Pompey in comparison to the other teams in the Championship. And also, I think he's had to deal with trauma at the start of this season in terms of, you know, injury to Murphy, their best player, you know, unquestionably their best player. Callum Lang is another really direct runner for them, you know, physical player in the front line who can get the team up the pitch on transition, which is, you know, always going to be a big strength of this Portsmouth team in their current guise, especially away from home. They have to have pace to break with. And at the moment, they're having to deal without their two best outlets. Schmidt, the goalkeeper as well. Shaughnessy, centre-half, missing. So they're a little patched up, yet they're coached so well. And I think, you know, you have to have that kind of us against the world mentality when you're one of the unfancied teams in the Championship, and they carry that fight consistently away from home. Just look at the performances so far this season at Oxford, West Brom, Southampton, I might be missing one, and now Leicester. You know, they've been competitive to the end in every game. So a great point. And I listened to the back end of your commentary, and Matt Elliott was completely, I think, aware that Pompey were deserved of their point given their second half performance.
Yeah, massively. A friend of mine was in the away end on Saturday night. He messaged me post-match to say, aside from my friends and family, there's nothing I dread losing more than John Massino as our manager. Somebody who's not so beloved by his current team supporters is Liam Manning. He's feeling the heat after another dismal result at Carrow Road last weekend, gallingly for him against the club he left in the summer, Bristol City. Afterwards, he said, "We need a few to start stepping up and owning performances because everything's just too nice around the place. We have to try and change that." We're going to talk about John Eustace next, of course, as we record on Tuesday. Derby and Norwich are meeting tonight. Feels like a massive game for both managers. On Manning, though, we're fans of his work, but I wonder if this is maybe an example of someone not doing their due diligence on their new employers. I ask that because on Saturday there were loads of chants against the sporting director and the chief exec, and Manning himself questioning whether the composition of the squad is right. Just wonder if he's maybe a little too quick to make the leap.
I think the reality is as well, though, Matt, that was a massive overachievement getting Bristol City to the playoffs last year. I think Bristol City on their day, probably this season and previous seasons, are a really good watch when they get it right. But they're so inconsistent. and have been so inconsistent when they look like they're ready to make the jump. And also, I just think he wasn't, I don't think he wasn't backed is probably the right terminology, but he needed better front players last season. It was clear as day, and they didn't roll the dice in January. So for him to achieve what he did, I think was first class. And I think for him to emulate that this season at Ashton Gate would have been a really tough ask. And I just think, you know, he's from East Anglia. Norwich is probably a step up, you would think, in terms of the aspiration, the reality of maybe getting in the Premier League quicker. And I do have, again, I don't know if it's sympathy with him in terms of the makeup of the squad, but, you know, a lot of young players under 24 brought in from various different European leagues. Yes, some of them, you know, high pedigree. The goalkeeper coming in from Sporting, he's a little bit older. Signed players from other Portuguese top flight clubs, from Ajax. So these aren't, you know, bad players that are coming in. But when there's this amount coming in, and also they've been hindered by injuries to Chris Garden and Diallo, who looked quite bright in their maiden few Norwich performances, I think there are slight mitigating circumstances. But, you know, there's no getting away from the facts that the results dictate, and the results at home especially dictate, and to lose six on the bounce in all competitions is a disaster. So it's a huge game tonight, and it'll be a huge game at the weekend if he's still in charge, and he needs a result by hook or crook just to alleviate the initial discontent and give himself a bit of time to get some players back and to work with his squad. But at the moment, they're too easy to play through. The pace of Bristol City, the direct run in, hurt them. And despite having lots of spells with the ball, they're not making good enough chances at the other end. So it's a bit of a recipe for disaster. And just quickly, because Jonas Hofthorpe's team last year, early stage of the season, I enjoyed watching. They had 16 points through 10 games. Manning's got half that amount, 8 points through 10 games, and six goals fewer have been scored. So they were getting value for money, maybe not the consistency this time a year ago, Norwich. I don't think they're getting either at the moment. They're not getting the results, and it's not particularly enjoyable on the eye either.
Yeah, and it's going to be a real down in the dumps derby at Pride Park. Derby, only one win all season. That was in the middle of last month, beaten at Oxford on Saturday after three successive one-all draws. You were certain that John Eustace was going to turn things around for them, Sam. Yeah. I look at it and I think, A, he's in trouble because of the results. Obviously, they're down near the bottom of the table. But then you see that the captain, Lewis Travis, is going to be out for 6 weeks with a calf injury. And you think, this isn't looking great for anybody associated with the Rams at the moment.
No. You know, I wouldn't want to be disparaging about Paul Warne, because I love Paul Warne and I thought he was great for Derby for a lot of his tenure. But I just remember when John Eustace went into QPR and the players were so low last season. They lost 4-0. And I think he just walked through the door, Eustace, and he maybe foolishly took the team that night in West London and they were thumped. So to turn their fortunes around as he did was an incredible achievement. And I think this is slightly different from maybe Manning and maybe one or two others in the Championship, that he has that credit in the bank still. But how long does that remain and not run out? I think these are two enormous games, because if they are sitting on one win from 12 games after Norwich and QPR at home in the next couple of games, that's an awful start for the aspirations, I think, of the club, the way they've been speaking off the pitch in terms of the hierarchy when they hired John Eustace and wanted to kind of give him the keys to the rebuild in the summer. And I think if you just look at the 11, Matt, like, that's a decent Championship team, a squad that's added a lot of nous and quality, and they're underperforming at the moment. It just feels like it's a little bit reactive yesterday and today, because they've lost at Oxford, and the manner of the defeat as well, where they've not really laid a glove. They've been outplayed, out-footballed. They've created very little, and I think that's in keeping with a lot of the recent performances. Lowest XG4 in the league, least amount of shots. Carlton Morris hasn't scored, I don't think, since the fourth game of the season. So, you know, they're woefully poor going forward at the moment. And on Saturday, you know, the strong suit of John Eustace has always been defensively the structure of the team. That went awry as well. So massive couple of games. But again, you know, I still think one victory for them could turn their fortunes around. I'm not so sure with the aforementioned Norwich City.
All right, low scoring draw again for me, that one. Derby, by the way, go to Blackburn early on next month. Be interesting to see if Eustace is still in post to face his old club. Okay, we're going to turn our attention to League One next. We are very pleased to welcome back one of our favourite guests to the pod. AFC Wimbledon boss Johnny Jackson joins us now. Don's had a brilliant start to life back in League One, fourth in the table, within touching distance of the leaders Cardiff after Saturday's win at Plymouth. Johnny, is this just how you planned it then? It's going perfectly as you would have expected it to?
Yeah, exactly how we thought. No, of course, listen, it's been unbelievable start. I think it's exceeded all of our expectations. I thought we could definitely mix it up and compete. But yeah, to be in the position that we're in, I suppose, after 12, 13 games is, yeah, no one quite expected this to be where we are, sort of in a playoff position, a point up the top of the league. And we've won as many games as we have, I think, would call probably all of us by surprise. But yeah, it's been enjoyable, and I don't think it's been a fluke either. I think we've been playing well, and we probably deserve what we've got.
Do you have to temper those expectations a little bit amongst supporters and maybe people in the boardroom too? Are you happy to just ride that wave?
I think there needs to be a reminder just to try and manage the expectations, because we are obviously going to hit some rocky periods. We are going to go on little runs where we can't quite pick up points. We are going to face times where we're missing players, key players, and I think that's where we'll struggle, perhaps, where other teams might have the edge on us, just because of the depth of our squad and the resources that we've got, really. So I'm anticipating that might happen. Hopefully it doesn't, but I think it's important that if and when that does happen, that we're realistic and sort of accept it for what it is, you know. So there's always the reminder. And I don't want complacency to slip in either with the players, to think all of a sudden that because we are where we are, that we've cracked it, because I think that's when we become at our worst, really. And it doesn't happen often with this group of players, but it's important. Saturday's game, for example, is going to be one of the first times probably where we go into a game as favourites this season and almost expected to win. And it can't just be a given that's going to happen, of course, because no game of football's like that in this league.
Johnny, without giving away too much, obviously, but when the playoff success is achieved and you get back for pre-season, you're stepping up a level. You've had such success with a settled system, settled style, personnel. Do you have to tinker, or did you tinker in pre-season knowing that you were stepping up a level? Was there anything obvious that you looked at improving or changing?
Try to bring continuity, to be honest, Sam. We had such a short turnaround, like from the final to being back in training was about 3.5 weeks, maybe 4 at a push. And we tried to keep as much of the squad together as we could. So obviously we lost, you know, the goalkeeper went back to Palace. We lost both wing backs. But beyond that, we sort of pretty much kept everything together. So there was continuity to the squad, to the lineups, to the fact that we hadn't had long between playoff final to coming back into pre-season. So I thought it would have been crazy because of where we was and how little time we had to prepare and to recruit to start trying to tinker too much and change. We flirted with a couple of not major overhaul of the system, but just, you know, sometimes playing with two tens, sometimes playing an extra midfielder, but all sort of within the framework of a back three with wing backs. But we've done that last season as well, so we can play in both of those systems. But it was about just trying to continue on, really. The irony is we was absolutely dreadful in pre-season, as bad as you'll see, which had me a little concerned at one stage. That
I lasted 45 minutes at Sutton United. I'd seen enough.
Yeah, well, I wanted to come with you, to be honest. And then it got slightly worse the following week at Southend, the week before the season started. So I'd be lying to you if I wasn't a little bit put out by that. But I think that was down to the lads having not had much of a break, to be honest. And they was almost just ticking boxes, really, in pre-season. And it was almost as soon as the real stuff started, the whistle went at Luton, they kicked into the normal team and players that I knew that they could be. And I sort of quickly forgot about what I'd seen in the previous 5 weeks of pre-season. So, yeah, and now we look similar. I think we're better. We're playing better than what we did last season in the main. But a lot of it looks the same. A lot of the personnel are the same, as you know. And, yeah, we're having sort of similar outcomes, really.
What about those two wing-backs then that you brought in? Because I'm sure you get so many names and when you were looking to replace Nerville, and the lad whose name completely escapes me, who's now at Wickham. Go on.
James Tilly.
You get Esimwe and Seddon, and in terms of numbers as well, they've chipped in, but they look to have just filled in remarkably well in what's is such a pivotal position for you.
Yeah. You know, I made no secret about wanting to keep hold of Tilly and Nerville. I thought going up would give us an opportunity to do that, because if you look at it, obviously we've lost both players to teams in the same league, which is disappointing. But I think that gives you an idea of where we're at compared to some of the teams that we're competing with as far as what we can offer players. So they've decided to go elsewhere, and that's football, you understand. So they become really key positions that we wanted to get the recruitment right. Obviously, in the system that I play, or that I've been playing, wing-backs are vitally important. So we sort of looked at the attributes of those two that outgoing and tried to look for something similar in the boys coming in. Seddon obviously had played for the club twice before, so someone that's really familiar with the football club. Obviously not so familiar with me, but I saw the attributes that he can bring to that position, and I thought he'd definitely be a really, really good player. I'll be honest with you, they've probably both taken me by surprise at how good they've been, you know, and there could still be time where they might sort of have a little dip in form, but I've got to say him and obviously Nathan Esimwe is a player that I know from when I was at Charlton, and he was coming through at that stage. So someone that kept my eye on, obviously came up against him last season, notably in the final. And actually him and Josh Nerfield probably cancelled each other out that day. And you don't often see players do that to Josh, keep him quiet for the 90 minutes. I think maybe he had one chance second half that he might score. But in the main, that was a good battle. So someone that we was looking at closely, obviously knowing that we might lose both of those guys. So, yeah, we moved quickly to get Nathan as well. Obviously, having that relationship with Charlton definitely helped, and we managed to get that over the line. And again, he's been unbelievable so far.
In terms of your own career, Johnny, you've been in charge for what, more than 3 years now, which is an eternity by EFL standards. Are you thinking you're going to be a kind of Roy Hodgson-style do-the-job into your 70s, or have you got an exit strategy for some time before you draw your pension?
Not sure about the 70s, to be honest. Not sure I could take the stress for another 30-odd years, to be honest. But, I see myself as a career manager. You know, it's all I've ever wanted to do, really, since I retired. And I actually don't, I still feel like a young coach and manager. But, you know, you're looking around the league, you know, like looking, even last week, Jack Wilshere down in Luton, he's 10 years younger than me, you know. So I am actually quite experienced now, over 200 games as a manager, obviously a load more as a coach as well. So, I feel like I'm starting to get some real good experience under my belt, but I still see myself as a young coach who still learning all the time. And I think, I've got a lot of legs in me, hopefully. Not physical legs, because they went a while ago, but I've still got my hair. I'm still going all right. A few greys peeping through, but I've got a lot of energy about me, and I still think I've got a lot to do and a lot of ambitions in this managerial game. So hopefully can be in it for a long time.
Before Matt ruins our reputations with a quick quiz, for the listeners, because I haven't been shy in coming forward with this, how much are you putting this good run down to the Italian meal that we shared? It's no coincidence, is it?
I don't think so. It's got to be key. It was right at the start of it as well, wasn't it? We'd had an okay start, but then we went for the pulpit, and it's just sort of gone crazy since then. So I think we need to get another one scheduled in soon.
Wait for you to drop some points, and then reconvene when you need the upturn in the spring.
Pasta equals points, clearly. Right, yeah. Speaking of points and Italian food, actually, long-time listeners will know that Johnny and Sam are two of the biggest Sopranos fans you'll ever meet. So obviously, we're going to have a quick quiz on the show. Three questions each. Johnny, you're up first. What year was The Sopranos first broadcast?
Oh, late 90s.
I'll give him a year either way.
Late 1999.
Absolutely spot on. Didn't need the help. 1-0.
Put me under the gun.
Sam, what's the name of Tony Soprano's boat?
It's a tapping, isn't it?
It's a tapping.
Oh, my God.
Not so easy when the pressure's on, isn't it? No, this is why you were never...
I'll get the bonus point?
No, no, you can't get the bonus point. I'll get it, but it might be here a while. Can I have the initial?
No.
It's Italian for the never regions, I think.
Oh, God.
You're going to have to push it.
No, go on blank, go on.
It's just Dugots.
Oh, sure is. 2-0. Crikey. You could pretty much finish it off here.
Oh, right, go on.
Johnny, what's the name of the racehorse that Tony Soprano once owned?
Oh, come on.
Paloma.
This is too easy. You need this, Sam. This is not so easy. What school does Meadow decide to attend at the end of season 2?
He'll get that as well. I'm comfortable he'll get that.
Meadow is Tony's daughter, for any listeners who haven't watched the show.
I can only think of Ruckus or whatever. Chrissy goes and robs them.
At the end of the show, or the one that the uni she goes to during?
I think it must be the uni because it's end of season 2.
Is it Columbia?
Columbia is absolutely right. This is incredible stuff. It's 4-0. All right, your final question, Johnny. Hilariously, I wrote a tiebreaker as if we're going to need that. An astonishing 27 actors who appeared in The Sopranos also appeared in which seminal mob movie?
Gotta be Goodfellas, isn't it?
Well, I mean...
Well, they got that.
I feel...
You should have gone first, Sam.
I feel almost as bad as you do, Sam, for the quality of these questions. Let's hope you don't get this right, Sam, just to finish it off. Orange J is one of the bodyguards for which fictional rapper who appears in the show?
Oh, my God. Orange J is one of the fictional what?
Is one of the bodyguards for which fictional rapper?
No, but he'll get that as well.
You pass it over?
Yeah.
Got to be Massive Genius, isn't it?
I mean, fitting. Massive Genius, certainly when it comes to The Sopranos. Not that you need any confidence with how the results have been going, but that's something positive to take into Burton at the weekend, isn't it, Johnny?
See what I've done there? Just laid down for him unceremoniously so he can get the confidence levels up before Terry Burton at home.
Good of you. Good of you. Right, Johnny, we really appreciate your time. Good
Can
luck for the
that?
Rest of the season. And yeah, I mean, well done. I don't know how many times you've watched Sopranos, but it's paid off.
Yeah, definitely. I need a rerun, though. I'm getting a little bit rusty, but we'll take it. 6-0. So thanks for having us, boys.
Also in League One, Blackpool have appointed former Bolton Wanderers boss Ian Ebbett as their manager. He signed a 2.5-year deal. Returns to management having left Bolton in January. He was there for 4.5 years. He played for Blackpool for 7 years, replaces Steve Bruce, who was sacked earlier in October. Feels like a really good get this, Sam, to me, on the face of it for Blackpool, given that they are bottom of the league. You'd imagine they might not be for too much longer.
Yeah, it feels perfect. I'll come on to my one concern in a moment. But yeah, obviously a big hero in those parts. I think a massive favourite from that time in the Premier League. And not only him, but Stephen Craney coming back as well. They've already got Steve Banks, long-time goalkeeper there. And also Stephen Dobby, who was really unfortunate because Clarkey spoke about a decent Blackpool performance at Stockport, I think, last week. And then they conceded against Wickham 90+11, I think it was. Jack Grimmer got the equaliser at the weekend. So he very nearly had a kind of narrow defeat against one of the promotion favourites in Stockport and a victory over Wickham in his two interim games. So yeah, great that he's going to be part of it. I'm sure that Ian Ebbett will welcome that. I presume they were former teammates as well. So they got four ex-Tangerines in the dugout, which is a nice sentiment, but it'll only go down well if it yields results in the short and the long term. But yeah, my one concern would be, like, hiring Ian Ebbett comes with a guarantee that the style will be pretty consistent. The formation will probably be maybe that 3-4-2-1, 3-4-3 that we saw at Bolton. He'll want to dominate the ball. We did see variations of that maybe towards the end at Bolton in individual games. But the only thing is he's going in to replace Steve Bruce, who, you know, I wouldn't imagine was too concerned about his side having the lion's share of the ball. And in keeping with that, I look at the signings that have been brought in. For example, you know, defensively, they've brought in defenders, people who can head it and can block it and can be aggressive, people like Horsfall and Ahikwe. I would presume that Ian Everett looks at, yes, that, because that he was that type of player, but also people that can handle the ball and play into midfield. Where they do have Jordan Brown, who came in from Leyton Orient, and I remember flagging him in the summer, who's a lovely footballer, good at the base of a midfield, so he could probably do that Josh Sheehan role for them. But yeah, I think all over the squad, you probably don't have loads of guys that stand out as being, you know, real ball-playing, technically efficient guys who want to play in tight spaces. You know, they've got quite a lot of pace, quite a lot of directness, quite a lot of energy and aggression. So it's how Ian Everett wants to approach it, I suppose, with that squad in the short term. Does he immediately want them to mirror what his Barrow and his Bolton team have been, or is he going to adapt to the players that he inherits? So a few question marks in that regard, but I've no doubt that, you know, in League One, he will be a quality operator, and I expect him to turn their fortunes around despite what I've just said. I've got a lot of respect for him. I like him. We spent a season or half a season together as teenagers at Northampton, and I thought he was unfortunate towards the end at Bolton and thoroughly deserves the opportunity at a good club, which he's been given.
Yeah, nice first game for him as well against Peterborough on Saturday away from home. The team just a place and a point above them in the table, so a chance for them to get some points on the board early on. All right, we are going to speak to the Barnet boss next. Well, let's make it a hat-trick of managers on the show, shall we? Joining us is the Barnet boss, Dean Brennan. Dean, thanks so much for your time today. We've got to start with the fresh breaking news. You've managed to get Britta Sombalonga to come and join the party. How pleased are you to get that signing over the line, and what do you think he can add for you?
I think if you actually look at our squad, first and foremost, we've only got two players over the age of 40 in our squad, so he'll make it three. He's got vast experience. He's been training with us for the last month. He wants to come back to London. He's got three children and a wife in London, so he's back now and he's with us, so it's a great signing for us. He's got loads of quality, and like I say, his experience will be vital for us.
And Will, do you think he's up to speed in terms of getting straight into the team? Do you think he'll need a little bit of time to get to full match fitness?
He'll start tonight. He'll start against Cambridge tonight. He'll come in, he'll probably play 60 minutes. He's now done, if you look at it, he's been with us, this is week four. I always like the players to do a six-week pre-season, so he's probably got 2.5 weeks left of his own personal pre-season for when we can start him in games. But he's going to have to earn the right to get into the team, because players like Leon Love and Callum Stead are playing really well at the minute. So we just got to make sure we keep that competition for places. We know Britt's a great character. I know him personally as well, so I think he'll do a good job for the squad.
Yeah, well, I'm a Forest fan and we absolutely loved him. So if you get anything like that kind of output, you'll be all right. Sorry, Sam.
Dean, I wanted to ask you about the style, because obviously you got so many plaudits during your success in the National League. Have you had to tinker that at all, given that, you know, the calibre of players obviously moved up with the level?
We've always been adaptable, Sammy. If you look at us last year, mainly we press teams. My philosophy is to tackle the opposition. I like to build a team on how I didn't like playing against players. So I was a technical player, so I build teams that can run and get after the opposition. That's our first part of call. And then we'll try to overload the opposition, whichever way. It can be a long ball, it can be a 2v1 in a wide area. That's basically how we play. If you look at us at the weekend against Notts County, we dominated possession against them, but we pressed them as well. I think we're the highest pressing team in the division, or one of them. So from our point of view, we always just looked at weaknesses in the opposition and how we can bring our style and philosophy on into the game.
And obviously the last couple of months really after a tricky beginning has been exceptional. The home form, the contrast early on, were you worried about that? And is there any reason that your first victories in League Two come away from home? Is that a style thing, or was that just a strange quirk of circumstance?
No, there is reason behind it. The reason our best players are missing. Nick Tavares is our main centre-half, and Lee Unlove was missing, and Callum Stead had no pre-season. So them three players who all helped us shot us to the title, basically, in the National League last year, they were all missing. I knew once they'd come back, we'd be a stronger force again. So they're back now, and there's no coincidence we're winning football matches again.
You mentioned tonight's game. It's Tuesday morning as we record. You've got Cambridge in the EFL Trophy. How much of a balancing act is it picking a team for that? I guess, obviously, you want to win it, but minute management will come into it as well, right, with your regular first teamers and maybe those who haven't seen so much action.
Yeah, we'll rotate the whole team tonight. And the players knock on my door all the time wanting to play. So here's their opportunity to play. Show me how they can get into the team. I think it's well documented that we look at cup competitions as a bonus. We sort of walk around the 46 games because what happened to us in previous seasons where we got into playoff positions when we come second in the National League and come fifth. We had good runs in the FA Trophy. I think we got to the quarterfinal and the semi-final. And we were playing Saturday, Tuesday throughout February and March. And when it come to the playoff games, we were shot and we were dreadful in the playoff games. So last season when we won the title, we decided to write off the cup competitions and just have them as a bonus and play our squad players in them, and we'll do the same this year. We haven't got the strength and depth to be going in all four competitions, so we're a small football club. I know we got a big heart, but we have to look where we are in the food chain and prioritise the games, which are the EFL games.
It probably leads quite well onto this question, Dean. Obviously, we're speaking on the back of a weekend where Swindon were beaten by Accrington, Walsall were beaten at home by Barrow. What's the realistic proposition for you this season? And can you dream that, you know, with that surprise element that you've clearly got this season, it probably mirrors what Bromley have done and Harrogate, Forest Green going back a few years as well. Because is there a chance you could achieve something magical, I suppose, this year?
Yeah, I just think from the expect, we set a points total every season. And I think if I've a saying in life, if you reach for the moon, you just might get the stars. And there's no reason why we can't make a good effect and a good impact on this division. I think we've made an okay one after 14 games. We're a little bit shy of where I think we should be with 20 points. I think we should have more points. Our performance has deserved that. But we understand this business is about both boxes. I have to say, I think MK Dons will take some catching with the quality and strength and depth of what they've got. So I think they're the strong favourites, and then I take Chesterfield. And after that, I think it's a free-for-all with a lot of different clubs.
Dean, if I could just take you back, because obviously we've got a good mutual friend and I've known you a few years. When you were coming towards the end of your playing but starting to do your managing in the non-league, was it always the ambition to be a full-time manager in the EFL, or is it just the way the journey's happened?
I always wanted to be a manager, Sam. I've always been a thoughtful player. I felt I was always influential in the changing room with players individually. I was always intrigued by coaching. And I started that journey quite young. I was 28, so I'm 45 now. It's been going a long time. And I know it's a survival business, and it's so important. Any young managers, I always say to them, don't look at the money. Make sure you marry the chairman or the owner or the corporation. You marry them for time. I think that's worth way more than money in this business. And I know the higher you go, I know the more ruthless it gets. But I'm just enjoying the ride. And I've survived what I'm doing at 14 years. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm very lucky to do the job I do. I love what I do. And long may it continue.
Yeah, it's going pretty well so far, that's for sure. Right, as Sam says, we always finish with a mega serious question. I note you're at Barrow this weekend. That's got to be your longest away of the season. Talk to me about what we're dining on the coach and the way home. We have the theory that the lads could have fish and chips, but that's going to stink out the coach for the 6 or 7 hours or whatever it's going to be. Or do you need that little carrot dangling there? A couple of cans, maybe a pickled gherkin. That's what you get if you bring me back 3 points.
To be fair to the lads, we always look at food reviews. So sometimes we get a Chinese, sometimes we might get an Indian. Sometimes they all love Nando's now, don't they? But that's got quite expensive now, so I don't think our club can afford that. But we'll just look at food reviews in the area, and it could be fish and chips, yeah. There's always, air bus journeys are always quite intriguing, to be fair. We want the lads to, you know, really sort of dine down and relax after the game. I think that's important. We want them to, you know, not be robots. We want them to be human beings and enjoy life. So we'll always have a little sing-song on the bus on the way back.
All right. I reckon Nando's is probably the safest best from a kind of odour on the bus point of view. So yeah, maybe ask the chairman if he can stretch to that just for this weekend, given the length of the journey. Dean, really appreciate your time today. Good luck tonight, Saturday, rest of the season.
Cheers. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Sam.
great to have Dean Brennan on the show. Really grateful for his time. Okay, predictions time then, Sam. Last week, Adrian got 4 points. You got 3 points. I didn't get any points whatsoever. Adrian correctly predicted a 2-2 draw in Bradford against Barnsley, and you were on the money with your Salford and Oldham prediction, which finished 1-0. So therefore, I'm going to let you have first dibs on the first game. Tricky because of the midweek action, but Derby QPR is the first one that I've selected.
Yeah, I'm starting already, I think, to gamble a little bit because Clarkie's got a decent lead. So I have actually jotted down my predictions already and had a little look at the form. I think that QPR will get something at Derby, but in keeping with recent weeks, I can't see many goals. So I'm going to go for a share of the spoils, 1-1.
All right, Clarkie went for 1-0 Derby. I simply can't bring myself to predict anything other than a Derby defeat. So I'm going to go for 1-0 to Rangers. Stevenage Bradford, Clarkie's got this pegged as a 2-1 win for the hosts. I'm going to flip reverse that and say it'll be 2-1 Bradford. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with, 2-1 Bradford. So I don't know if they'll shut Stevenage out, but I've made my bed, haven't I? And I need to gamble. I'll take the 1 point, even if it's not the correct score. I'll go 2-3
wow.
Bradford in a thriller.
Nice. What about Notts County Cambridge? Adrian thinks it's going to be 2-1 to Cambridge. How about you?
Yeah, this is the one where Clarkie's just, you know, he's just thrown something out there.
Aren't Cambridge one of the 700 clubs that he claims some sort of affiliation with?
Indeed they are. Indeed they are. Forgot that. I think that's where he started going to watch football, wasn't it, under John Beck. I think Notts County win this, and I think Notts County win well, despite I think there only been one place between the two in the division. I'll go for 2-0 Notts at a bit of a canter.
Okay, I think it's going to be a home win as well. I think while we're talking managers, we probably got Martin Patterson a little bit wrong, didn't we? Looks like he's doing pretty well. I'll say 3-1 to the Pies in that one. We'll let you know how we get on next week. A reminder before we leave you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. While we're plugging stuff, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, or just tell somebody that we are here, it all helps us add new listeners, which is what we are always looking to do. We'll finish, as we always do, with a tweet of the week. This one comes from Will Stanway, the Barrow custodian. He is quote tweeting the club official account after their sensational win at Walsall at the weekend. The official tweet said, 10-man Barrow leaves with the points. Sunglasses on emoji. Hashtag we are Barrow. That grammar is absolutely atrocious, admin. It's leave with the points. You don't need a dash after the 10 either. Anyway, Will says, unbelievable win, unbelievable support. Happy Saturday, Bluebirds. Blue heart emoji. Mark Williams in the reply simply said, outstanding. I mean, in terms of a textbook footballer's tweet, Sam, I think it fits that description.
I don't mind the unbelievable double. I quite like that, the repetition. What I don't like, and, you know, Barrow fans aren't going to be happy with this, but when I first read it, I don't associate Bluebirds with Barrow, really. I was thinking Cardiff City, which, again, I'm doing them a little bit of a disservice, but I think we've poured enough love on Barrow, especially during the Pete Wild days on this podcast, for me to...
Surely call them the Wheels or something.
Yeah, that's one of your favourite wheeled out gags, isn't it? you predict or review a Barrow game. Davis Adams is going to do something about a wheelbarrow. Standard procedure.
I don't own a wheelbarrow, do you?
No, I don't own a ladder. I don't own a wheelbarrow. I've got a toolkit, but like it's one of those where the majority of the screwdrivers is just like all over the cupboard under the stairs. I'm not handy.
I've got three ladders and my wife's got a toolkit, which tells you all you need to know about me, I think. Right, well, that was a really fun pod. Adrian will be back with us next week, but we'll try and get some more managers on, shall we? Because it was good to hear from people in the thick of the action in the EFL. We'll leave it there for today, though. So thanks to everybody who's joined us on the show today, and Sam and you for listening. Back with another show next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.